Hi, we're millennial marketing and technology experts working exclusively with associations. This is Rethink Association, where we dissect the emerging research on how to revamp your approach to appeal to Gen Y and Z, to thrive and to stay relevant in today's streaming mobile world.
You're joining us on episode 7 of Rethink Association. Today's topic is about what the future looks like for association members. We're asking, what does a member look like in 2030? We're here to help associations level up their technology and strategy from data through their integration. We're trying to stay on top of trends and where associations are going and helping them get there.
We have a guest here today that's kind of the ninja for the future of associations as well, Elisa Brewer-Pratt, CEO of Brewer-Pratt Solutions, LLC, and take it away. Tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
Thank you, Emily. Thank you, High Road Solutions. It's exciting to be here. I mean, you guys are the experts on the technology side and the back-end integrations of all that the future holds. And I'm really taking it from a different perspective. I'm looking at this from the human side, from the membership side. You mentioned some interesting points, that generational shift, the transfer of wealth, data security. I mean, these are all parts of the storm swirling around associations. And what I'm trying to do, and through the work of Brewer-Pratt Solutions, is make this, I don't know, make it achievable, make it less scary, and really boil it down to the person, to the human, to the member. And what could a member experience look like? Because I don't think many organizations know who their member of the future is, or how they're going to introduce themselves to them, how they're going to appeal to them and make that membership ask. You know, the membership is one thing. I mean, let alone their leadership. What the heck does their board look like in 2030? Who's going to be running this organization, and what do those leaders, you know, what do they prioritize? What's relevant to them? What is going to get them to yes? So all this is wrapped it, you know, together. And I was reading Emily's blog post from about a month ago about busting the generational myths. And, you know, I love breaking this down, because I'm a Zennial. So for those of you who don't know what word that merges together, I'm a millennial, having been born in that right window of time, but I'm also Gen X. So I'm kind of right there in the middle. And I like to say that I'm a translator. I speak both languages. So I speak the Gen X and maybe even the baby boomers. I mean, that's my parents. I also speak the millennials and the Gen Zs. And I'm definitely learning Gen Alpha, because that's my son. So I bridge all of these generations. And it's really that dynamic perspective that membership organizations need to have, but not so they can box us in, not so they can say, oh, you're in this category, so you're going to act this way, or you're this many years old, so you must want this or that. I mean, if we have not blown up discrimination and decided we're not going to judge and package people based on their age, their gender, their looks, their ethnicity, I mean, let's make sure we're not using the generational number as just another way to presume we know what they want and what they're going to do. We have to have these conversations. So I'm really excited about this. I'm glad High Road Solutions is kind of tackling this, because it's the important underbelly to technology and to the technology solutions. We can't just plug stuff in. We can't just create stuff and code our way through this. We have to know who we are trying to engage, why, and what gives them the best experience, the best outcome.
Yeah, I think those are really interesting points. And like you're saying, not segmenting or trying to put people in a box based on their age, but to still kind of use that information to understand what it is that they're looking for and how can you speak to them. So what are some things that you've kind of discovered? You said you're kind of bridging across these generational groups. What are some things that you've learned or discovered as you've researched into that?
You know, there are a couple, Nicole, thank you so much for the question. I appreciate it. There are so many variances, that we have to find the common factors, right? What can we prioritize with every membership audience that we interact with? And from what I understand there, what I've researched and am coming to determine through my work with membership and trade associations is three things. First is value is everything. I don't care how old you are. I don't care how rich or poor you are. The information, the connections, the benefits that you can receive from an association are going to be evaluated based on that return on investment, that dollar amount, the time investment. So, you know, the trick is to knowing what is valuable to what member, what is valuable to what prospective member. And it's always going to come down to value. So if you don't know your value proposition, then you aren't even prepared to talk about your future membership or going after that future and prospective membership. You need to figure out who the heck you are, why you are, and what mission you are trying to advance for the betterment of whom. What is that return to not only your member, your donor, your community, whomever you're trying to impact? You know, secondly, you have to socialize with purpose. And this is where things get not layered, but they multiply a bit. Different audiences, whether it be age or demographic or places in their career, are going to be in different places. You want to go to where they are. You can't just have a website. You can't just, you know, put out a newsletter. You can't just have a magazine. That's static. That's a billboard. That's you expecting them to come to you. And that's fairly arrogant, to be honest. You know, you really have to set up shop on a variety of platforms, whether those be social media or professional or academic, wherever your prospective member is, that's where you need to go. That's where you need to establish a presence and have a sincere voice. I think we've all learned this with social media. You can't just tweet once a year. You can't just put up that first funny TikTok video and expect people to keep coming back. You know, there's a consistency of presence that is necessary, and that presence needs to be sincere. And you know, identifying your audience segments and creating those personas. I like to call them personas, not generations or not, you know, not groups, but what are the personas? And it's less about their age, race, or gender, and more about what they're trying to achieve, what they might be coming to your organization for. And, you know, persona really leads me to the third piece of this, and that third common thread through all the generational and membership growth work that I've been doing is that stories matter. Individual and personal accounts are important. I mean, you're not just trying to get someone to say yes to paying dues or yes to making a donation. You're trying to give them the chills. You're trying to give them goosebumps about why, about how they can make an impact, but through personalized narratives. You know, you're not just trying to find the right messenger, but your organization can truly amplify your mission, your vision by finding the right stories within your industry, within your membership. That's how you can tell your value story and socialize your organization all at the same time in a less salesy way. Let those people whose lives you've changed, whose, you know, lives your organization has changed, let them tell that story. That's the most powerful story that can be had. And, you know, again, I think it goes to reiterate that technology is the channel. Technology is the tactic and the mechanism. But this really comes down to people, and it comes down to experience and that impact and value.
I think you really touched on something great there with that personalized experience. What it really boils down to is when you're trying to engage with a certain group, you really need to collect all that data about your end user, right? You're trying to interact with them, but in order to do so effectively, you have to collect all the data about them, their online behavior, what their interests are. And I think all of that comes down to an overall marketing strategy. So one, how are you going to capture that data? Two, what kind of data are you looking to get about these prospective members or audiences that you're targeting? And then three, what are you going to do with that data to personalize that content and actually reach out to them in an effective way?
Thanks, Ariel. No easy questions. So thanks for skipping right into the tough stuff. No softballs from Ariel. But I think, yes, I mean, data is your friend. Data is something you have to address strategically. It can't just be something you hoard and collect as much as you can without intention. But I like to point my clients and those membership organizations in the direction of retention first. You have to retain, you have to respect your existing members. They are your legacy. They are your current infrastructure and foundation upon which you build. So retention comes first, and in investing more aggressively in the data related to the members you already have will start to give you clues into that future. So, you know, starting with that data you have will help you understand where your holes are, where your gaps in data exist. And then as you start to ask the questions about the future, who could that member of the future be? And how do we think we could best impact the future? That starts to tell you what questions you might want to be asking of your membership or your future membership. I don't like collecting data that I'm not going to use. I think it's disingenuous. And it also creates that data hoarding situation where people think, oh, we have this huge survey. We just data dumped all this stuff. We've got lots of unique user fields. Well, you know what? Congratulations. But all you've done is dirty the water. All you've done is clutter. And it might make you feel better, but you've probably exhausted your audience from asking them 800 questions instead of the 4 questions that really mattered. So it's about focusing on your current members first and always putting that retention focus first and prioritizing data. What's right? What do you absolutely need to know right now? Because if you create this conversation and you're respecting your members and you have these open dialogues, you should have an access. You should have access to them moving forward. You don't have to get it all at once. So I'm not a huge fan of buying data. Maybe that's a thing. I don't always hear it going very well. I think that too just can muddy the waters and make you feel good. You know, you check a box, but what does it really achieve for you? We don't have telephone books anymore for a reason. You know, they're old, they're outdated. I'm not going to go buy a digital telephone book. So data is your friend, but it has to be handled intentionally and with your almost with your end goal. You know, knowing your end goal from the beginning. So I'd take small bites at that data apple. Ask 1 or 2 questions a year. Build your data. Hopefully these members, are with you for, hopefully their membership life cycle is one of many, many years, if not generations. So you have time to interact with them. Take small bites at the apple and learn where to weave in data magnets and data leads into your registration forms, into your membership applications, into your annual checkups, whatever you do, however you touch your members in that digital capacity in an ongoing way, figure out how to just add one data point to that. And think beyond the checkboxes and radio buttons. That's probably my final piece to Ariel's 10-part question is an open-ended question may be hard to analyze. It may not translate into a pretty quantifiable pie chart, but that can be where the real value lies. So if you have the bandwidth to digest and analyze those open-ended questions, what's keeping you up at night? What does this industry or our profession look like in 2025? How could our organization best serve the next generation of scientists or police officers or teachers, whomever this association is? Ask your members to think to the future. They can, they already are. You just have to tap into it in a personal and sincere way. And then make sure, again, you're only asking the questions that will garner information you're going to use. It truly is, I think, disrespectful to ask people for information and for their opinion and then not do anything with it.
I think I think you're right on with all the points around the, how to collect the data, the, you know, taking your time, using small bites to build that persona up. I think a question we get a lot from our clients and just a frustration in general is, you know, understanding we need to move to this more personalized experience, create content that's really providing value. But when you start to break it down into segments and personas, how do you approach building a content strategy out for all these different segments? And how would you prioritize that process?
You know, first, thank you. I'm from all the nods, I get the sense that Emily and Ariel and Nicole are I think in line with the things I've been saying so far. So I'll keep going with the Brewer Pratt Solutions approach to this. But you know, I'm not a marketing specialist. I'm not a content specialist, but I think you have to know all members are not equal. And I'm coming from a trade association space when I say that. You may have a member that pays $50,000 a year in years in dues. You may have a member who sits on, you know, has people sitting on multiple committees. So, you know, it's in a trade association environment, it's more obvious to say that. In an individual membership association where you have the active participants, the passionate, the involved, the attendees, you know, that membership may be more valuable, not only to the rest of the members, but to the organization, even if the money is the same. So I would figure out a way to prioritize, and I know that's probably not politically correct, but to identify your most active. You know, a lot of people are talking about engagement scores. And, you know, if you're creating scenarios and member segments based on those engagement scores, that you can then cross tab with membership type or other demographics, you can figure out two things: who your high performers are and who your at-risk members are. I believe, you know, yes, they're two separate ends of the spectrum, but I think you have to keep singing to the choir. You have to keep those evangelists engaged. I think they're the ones that you can go to help generate the content. And then there are those that are at risk. And, you know, sadly, that at-risk portion may be 20, 30, 40% of your roster because they just aren't doing anything. They're passive. They're just receiving what you send, but they're not engaging back. And that type of content, you know, again, if you're going to where they are, and it's relevant to the mission, and it's still not getting any results, then maybe that audience needs to be asked a different kind of question. What does resonate with you? What are you looking for from this organization? And you know, content is, you know, it's just a fancy word for the information we've always been putting out there. But you know, whether it's in a different voice or a different medium or on a different platform, I feel for small staff, especially because they feel this new content burden weighing on their shoulders. And it's the same stuff we've always been putting out, but now you get to do it as a podcast or a blog or a short video or a quick web page or a pop-up ad or a tweet. So it feels overwhelming, but you know, content marketing to me, again, not the expert, so I may be way off here, but it's managing the message and it's learning how to repurpose and go to where your audiences are.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And I like the idea of repurposing your messaging and really you're leveraging content that maybe you already have, but positioning it in different ways based on what you know about that specific member. I guess, what is it, just, this is a broad question, but what do you think that the future member looks like for associations and how members will be changing over time, say 2030, in the next 10 years, 10, 15 years? And how do you think associations need to start adjusting their approach in order to cater to that change?
Sure. I think that question would be answered differently for different organizations, right? And you admitted this was a broad question, so I appreciate that. But I think it's important to say that there's no broad brush answer to that. the member of 2030 for the National Realtors Association is going to look different than, you know, the Retired Teachers Association is going to look different, you know, because there are different organizations that are suited to different careers, different communities, different categories of people, different places in your life, different interests. So with respect to all of those nuances, I do think that every organization has to first come to the realization and be willing to admit to themselves that the way they have recruited members in the past is no longer the way we recruit members now and moving forward. We can't do things the way we've always done them and expect continued, you know, positive results. If we want better, we want new members, we want those members of the future, we're going to have to adapt and evolve. So with that realization comes the how. All right, we know we have to change, but how the heck are we going to do that? And I think it's a recognition that, to your point, data is very powerful, and that they're out there. I am so tired of this, oh, the young are not joiners. That's crap. That's not true. That's not fair. That's one of the most biased, discriminating statements that I continue to hear. Young people are joiners. They just have to be shown the value. So I think the question a lot of organizations have to ask themselves is, do we have an entry point? What's the entry point into our organization that would appeal to someone who isn't us, isn't currently who we are already? And whether that's, again, younger in your career, younger in age, you know, whatever the different factor is that makes them your future member, how are they going to come to know about your organization? How are they going to be introduced? What is that entry point? Is it attending an event? Is it applying for a scholarship? Is it, you know, reading a newsletter? How are they going to come upon your organization? And what are they going to see? What are they going to feel? You know, I've talked to a lot of organizations who are afraid to adopt, a freemium type membership. They don't want to undercut the value of the paid membership levels that they have. But then I ask, you know, are you appealing to student members? How are you getting that pedestrian who might not know who you are interested in maybe not your organization, but your issues, your topics, your mission? Someone could easily go from a fan of your mission to a donor, to a member. It just depends again on the type of organization, but I think it's very important and absolutely necessary to identify what your entry point is for memberships at all levels. That person who's 10 years away, that person who's 10 months away, how are they coming upon your organization and how are you inviting them to engage?
I just have one question going back to one of your earlier points that's related, is that entry point is how often should the trade association or the professional association revisit their value prop? Or what are the signs that they need to? How do you get buy-in? What if you feel strongly that you have a good one and you answer that question entry point, you can't? So I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
You know, value propositions are, they sound difficult and they often get wrapped up in politics and personalities, but the numbers will tell you. If your value proposition is strong, your dues revenue will be equally as strong. And in some ways your non-dues revenue will be equally as strong because that too is intertwined in your value proposition. If your membership's declining, if your non-dues revenue, your attendance, your subscriptions are declining, then your value proposition is not what it should be. The numbers prove this out. So whomever in the organization is defending the value proposition, you should be able to use the numbers and quantify what the impact of that value proposition is and whether it's trending up or down. I encourage organizations not to wait until the numbers start to turn. Value proposition is, I'm an association nerd. So when I say I think value proposition conversations are fun, everyone else is probably rolling their eyes. But, I think it's a fun staff discussion. board brainstorming activity for, you know, at least every 24 months. I mean, we're in a world where technology is turning over, I mean, so frequently now. You might have been able to do it every 5 years or 10 years or, you know, during a strategic planning engagement, but that value proposition has to be a little more nimble these days to stay up with your competitors, to stay up with your members' changing needs, and to make sure that you are addressing your organizational alignment in conjunction with a value proposition and what you need to be delivering. So, you know, no strict formula for it, but if someone says they haven't evaluated their value proposition since before COVID, you know, that's an eternity ago, you know, at this point. You know, 2017, 2018 is like last century, basically. You know, things are so different now. I would encourage everyone to undertake a post-COVID value proposition analysis or discussion. You know, at least look at the numbers, at least quantify it, at least figure out and make sure you know what the heck your value proposition is. Because we're jumping ahead to assume an organization knows what it is and can put it down on paper, verbalize it, and measure it. There are too many organizations that can't even fully quantify that value proposition and haven't been measuring it consistently.
Yeah, I think we've talked a lot about how the pandemic has affected associations and just the way that they communicate with their members moving into more of a virtual space. And I think tying that into the value proposition and not only what channels and how are you speaking to and how you communicating with your members, but also like what is the value that you're offering to them and how has that changed based on how the world has changed in the last, you know, 18 months. What are some things that you've seen maybe with some associations you work with and just the shifts that they've undergone over the last year, 2 years, from a technological perspective and then just from a communication in general perspective?
Sure. Now this is, I mean, as much as I'm tired of talking about the pandemic, just like everyone else, there have been some great lessons learned here and some great examples, some great case studies. And I think you see two different sides to this. There are the organizations that were forced into innovation and they were thrown into maybe more technology than they had been ready for or would have taken on in a non-COVID world. And with that, you know, virtual events, hybrid events, online communities, other ways of getting connected to their members and trying to stay connected. There are people and organizations who had to move into that space much more quickly than they would have ever been comfortable. And, you know, I like to say, never let a good crisis go to waste. COVID becomes your opportunity to try things, to fast track, to pilot, to experiment. And if it doesn't work, you know, blame it on COVID, but don't just stay still. Then there are the other organizations that may have already been there or a little closer to that technology, that sophistication of technology. And some of my favorite stories are those people who used COVID as a chance to get personal. It sounds super, super old school, but I have a client who did a wellness check campaign. They picked up the phone and through phone calls and phone trees, all of their members and all their staff, they called every single one of their members. And this was in late summer of last year. How are you? It wasn't a sales call. It wasn't, we're trying to register you for an event. It wasn't update your data. It was, how are you? How are you handling all this? Are you okay?
Yeah, I mean, and that bringing that human touch in and that's creating such a strong relationship with your members. I think everybody going through that crisis, you know, they appreciate that so much more of just like later when the crisis is over, you remember that interaction and you remember that organization that, you know, created that experience for you. So yeah, that's awesome.
And that's really, I think what we knew all along, you know, maybe this is kind of a Wizard of Oz moment where we've always known that the solution is balance. And this is about balance of technology and the personal. And appealing to that next generation of member, whether it's your member you're looking to sign up next year or your member of 2030 or 2050, it's always going to be about balance. But striking that balance isn't as easy as it sounds. It requires a lot of organizational self-awareness. It requires a lot of data, and it requires some real effort, some work. This stuff isn't going to just happen because we need it to. We have to march forward and do the work.
Yeah. And going back to the entry point and talking about these younger generations and how are you recruiting, I wonder if having these now hybrid events and virtual events, you're starting to appeal to a group that maybe wouldn't have attended in-person events, or there's more opportunity to expand that membership base. Have you seen anything around that from a recruiting standpoint?
I have. It's been really interesting, the organizations that have used this opportunity to expand, not just to appease and maintain and say, oh, sorry, we can't get together in person. We'll give you this as a, as an apologetic replacement, but who are using that virtual expansion to go international or to reach those audiences who weren't ever going to get in a plane and spend $800 on registration and 5 days in, Orlando at a conference. There is an amazing amount of engagement that can be accomplished and value that can be derived from those virtual experiences. It comes down again to those personas and what each type of member is expecting out of the organization. If someone wants information, if someone wants connection and networking, if someone wants, credentialing and training and certification, how can those things be delivered in a multitude of ways so that we're serving those audiences? I'm a bit nervous for associations because now I think expectations are higher than they've ever been. Members want more. They want it in every format, on every platform, at all times, and on demand. And I'm a bit nervous that organizations, especially small to medium associations, will feel quite overwhelmed and financially strapped by that expectation. So, it comes down to, I think, being transparent and sharing that organizational vulnerability with your audiences. Hey guys, we're working towards this. Here's what our strategic plan has prioritized. We can't be everything to everyone at the same time, but we're working on it. Here's how we're helping you now. Don't try to pretend, don't try to fake it, but work towards it, because it's impossible to be everything to everyone on every platform at all times and at the same time. So be great at what you can be great at, and don't try to be everything, but be clear with who you are trying to be, with whom, and why.
I was going to add the more encouragement for the small to medium-sized associations. Bite off the smaller pieces, work with the foundation, like you said, of the data that you do have, get a 360-degree view of that, and be honest with what your strategy is, who you're serving, how you're going to serve them, and not do everything. We've heard some success stories when that happens.
I mean, small and medium organizations are my wheelhouse. I love organizations that are under 20 million and under 20 staff. I think that's where amazing, they already have that culture. Everyone's wearing all, different hats. It's an all hands on deck situation. We don't have the luxury of silos, right? Everyone's doing a lot of things, and we're hoping that we're rowing in the same direction. When I do strategic planning with organizations, as well as growth engagements, it really comes down to that bite size approach. I developed something called an implementation matrix, and it takes things down to the very granular. The board and the leadership get to determine the why and the what, but the staff have to determine the how and the when and the whom. So taking time to have those conversations, how are we really going to do this? How long is it going to take to do it? Putting that project management hat on, that's okay. It's necessary. The easy part is setting the goals And I was reading an article today from Harvard Business Review about the dopamines that are released in your brain when you set goals and when you write lists. And then the dopamines that are released that give you that high when you get to cross something off your list and when you're close to achieving those goals. But those chemicals are almost non-existent in between. And that's really where the work needs to get done. That's where we have to establish the plan, set the milestones, understand what success looks like. With my clients, that's where I find the biggest disconnect and where, again, I kind of put my translator hat back on and working with the marketing staff or the IT staff and the membership staff, making sure we're all saying the same thing and we understand what we're saying. Because when you define success and you hear different things, it tells you you need to take a few steps back in the process and clarify the goal. Because even in the office, different generations, different perspectives, different people of different experience are going to hear things differently. And we need to make sure as a team, we are all on the same page and using the same language as it relates to our definitions of success, our milestones, and our measures of that success.
I think one other thing that came up with COVID too is as we evolved into this fully digital world, there were a lot more data threats, right? So data breaches, there was the whole integrity conversation. I think that's something that associations have to move to the forefront too, just to be prepared for the future. What suggestions or tips would you give in terms of being ready for that and making sure that you're keeping all of that client and member data secure?
Oh, Ariel, this is such a difficult segment. You're the tough one. I have had a couple clients who have been impacted by ransomware. It was devastating. And I'm not a cybersecurity expert. I'm not a data security expert, but I would advise to my clients in terms of holistic organizational health to make sure you have that insurance, that cyber security and data security insurance, and to invest in that. Invest in the IT, invest in the data. This is no longer just something you can, oh, we've got some extra money over here. We'll look at some IT projects. IT and data integrity need to be a dedicated piece of your budget. And I'm sure you guys probably better than most can speak to a recommended percentage of budgets that should be allocated towards these things. People seem more and more willing to give information, but at the same time, oddly, they are more skeptical than ever. So it's a very weird world. And I always refer back to only asking for the information that you need and that you're going to use. Don't just gather to collect and hoard information and use the right vendors. Vet your vendors, use the correct vendors that are tested, that are safe, and that are going to make you look good and keep you protected. Because in a lot of cases, this is outside the realm of the association staff. So don't try to be this, don't Google this, it's not something you can YouTube. Go to the right vendor and make sure that that vendor understands your data environment, your member experience, your web database, CRM, AMS, all of it, all that integration, because it's not just the collection of data, it's the flow of it, it's the storage of it, it's all the people touching it. And so I'll admit, it's beyond me. I am intimidated by it. I will outsource the heck out of it. But I recognize the urgency of it. And I think everyone does. It's a matter of prioritizing it. And prioritizing it in your operations, in your business practices, and in your budgeting.
Yeah, I think it's definitely interesting to see everyone's kind of reevaluating their infrastructure, the platforms that they have, what they're using, looking at the way that they're collecting and using data, all of that. It's becoming more and more of a priority. And I think you're right that it is a bit overwhelming. for associations to now having to add that to the list of things they have to worry about. So I, you know, definitely working with the right vendors.
Well, too. It makes me sad because, you know, people always put nonprofits below for-profits as if for-profits are so much more advanced and sophisticated and this and that. And of course, sure. Take the Fortune 500. Yes, they're at a different level. But it, I think it's really going to come down to data and data security that expands that divide between for-profit and nonprofit. And that's where I don't want to see nonprofits get too far behind in best practices. You know, maybe it is an affordability component, but I'm sure there are, I don't know. I don't even want to make it sound easy or cheap because it probably isn't, but I know it isn't, but it has to be addressed.
It's something that has to be invested in to keep up with, you know, where the world is going. I know we brought this quote up. I think it was from Reggie Henry of your competitor is in another organization. It's the last good online experience you had. So you're in a way you are competing with Netflix and Spotify. It's people are expecting a certain experience. They're expecting to have the information that they're looking for easily accessible and, you know, personalized and customized to them. So it is something we all as association industry have to start thinking about. How do we slowly, baby steps, work towards that goal and creating that experience?
Nicole, this could be like three more podcasts. So I think I'm in total agreement with you. I think I call it the Amazonization, and that's a terrible word. I don't know why I just made that up, but the Amazonization, I'm sure there's a better way to say that, but you know what I mean? But that customer experience of immediate, free, you know, free shipping, and access, you know, this unlimited list of options, the access, the turnaround time. You know, people's expectations are higher. Their patience is shorter. On the content side of it, I think every organization, for-profit or nonprofit, are all competing with Google. And the value you really can provide is that you're streamlining, that you're focusing. I could type in, you know, best veterinarian, and I could get 4 billion results. But if I go to, you know, the Veterinarian Association, I can see who is prioritized there through a directory. If I'm a veterinarian, I can go there to get other services. So, you know, I almost think it's swung back. The pendulum is swung back. We're not competing with Google anymore. We're saving people from Google. We're giving them the top five or prioritizing or elevating the relevant while Google is just the phone book.
Yeah, I think that that's really interesting that with the excess of information, associations can become more and more valuable to help people to prioritize their time and where they're getting information they trust. So leaning into that, you know, that expertise that associations do have to offer is definitely where to go. And I think it's maybe reassuring to remember that most associations, we're all kind of facing the same problems, right? And the same struggle. Everybody's trying to move in that same direction, but probably facing a lot of the same problems. So,
Don't worry, I already trademarked Amazonization, so don't bother. I already bought the domain name. Don't even bother, Nicole. I got to it.
It's like not spelling in my head. It's kind of like,
no, oh, it's terrible. It's the worst word ever. But you know what I mean.
Is that a place in the map?
Can I yeah, get exactly. Amazonization. Oh yeah, it's got there's a lot of consonants and vowels in that word. It's terrible.
I know we're coming up on time, so thank you so much for all of your insights. I think it's been a really fascinating discussion. And if our listeners did want to learn more about you and what you do, how can they find you?
Absolutely. Well, I am an active LinkedIn person, so that's where you can find me on many a day. But you can always go to BrewerPrattSolutions.com and check out some client testimonials and some lists of our projects. We really focus on a three-legged stool of association success, and that is strategic planning and strategic solutions, that vision for the future and how to achieve it, the membership growth component, engagement, and that personal member experience, and then finally, leadership development. board governance, board leadership, and executive leadership. So that's what we do. And that's what keeps our clients happy and coming back. So we'd love to share more with you and to come back to High Roads anytime and have these chats, except Ariel, no more hard questions, please.
Oh, you love my questions. They're the good ones. It's how you get to the meat of it.
No, I appreciate it. I loved it. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. And maybe you guys can come join me on my podcast. I podcast every couple weeks. It's Association Transformation. And you can find me wherever podcasts are podcasted from. No, wherever they're posted.
Awesome.
I don't know what
thank
the
you
verb
so
is
much
there. We're done creating new words. No more new words today.
Yeah. And our takeaways today are, for associations to prepare for the future, they need to not only know their value proposition, but also be willing to continuously reevaluate that and their strategy to make sure that they're meeting the needs of their members. Attracting new members requires that you really get to know your prospects and their needs as they evolve, specific to your own niche. Data, of course, gives us valuable insight, but associations must also bring in that human touch and engage in a continual two-way conversation to understand how your association can bring value to them. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next time.